that paper. I'll get it. I'll be right back.
Just watch the cord here.
I will. Well, a plant I designed, small process design, and this is a flow sheet that represents it. Mm-hmm. It's a rather simple plant. It will process 180,000 tons a day of shale and produce 145,000 barrels a day of synthetic crude oil. And the very interesting thing about that was that at one time we thought that eastern shale was no good at all. And because you didn't make very much oil by processing it. Really, it was retorting. And the western shale, the shale that's deposited in Colorado and Wyoming and Utah, in that area, the shale is much better because it gave a high yield of oil. Well, it's very interesting. The eastern shale is all very aromatic in chemical structure. And I could hypothesize two good theories of how that happened geologically. And the western shale all had a cycloalkane type fuel. And that's I bring out in this paper. And I'm sure that's not a subject that you're too much interested in.
Well, it is a fascinating area. I'm a chemist by background. So,
oh, you are?
Yes. So, not a chemical engineer, but a chemist.
Well, there's some of the best chemical engineers I ever ran into got their degrees completely in chemistry. But one of the fields of chemistry that they studied very carefully was physical chemistry. Well, that's the backbone of chemical engineering. And
have you had any reception to this?
I've gotten a couple of nice letters from the vice president. And asking me to keep him informed on, matter of fact, it would provide, if we produce all the oil that we're importing, if we produce that here in the United States, we could provide about 20 million jobs, good jobs, for people. And that he's very interested in, and has assured me that when he and the president begins really, and he didn't tell me when they were going to do that, begins really the study of providing jobs in this. He wanted to look very carefully at this. I have the copies of his letters in my files in there, and if you would want to read them, they're very short, I'll be glad to get them for you.
Well, maybe we could do that later when we're...
You do that. Now, you lead me in what you want to learn from me rather than me to...
Well, I'd like to go back to Michigan.
Okay, let's do that.
And first of all, did you play any basketball at Michigan?
No, I found that... working and carrying a full load of... I went through Michigan I got my bachelor's degree and a master's degree in 5 years there, and to do that and carry and completely support myself there was pretty much unheard of, but I did it.
What kind of work did you do to support yourself?
Well, for the first 2 years in Ann Arbor, I worked in the cafeteria. And the man who owned the cafeteria, he was an Irishman, a very high-tempered Irishman. He fired me up. I expected a dozen times, and I just went back and went to work. And he'd forget about it. And I learned an awful lot from him about people. But I worked there 2 years, I guess, a little more than 2 years, but then I got a job in the Department of Engineering Research in Ann Arbor at the university, and I worked there until I got my degree. It paid more, and besides, I was actually practicing in a mile away the profession that I was going to enter.
I've talked to both Donald Othmer and Donald Katz.
Donald Othmer was, he got his doctorate at Ann Arbor just a little ahead of me. I didn't get my doctorate there. I got my master's degree there, and Professor Badger wanted me to stay on and work under him and get my doctorate. And I was a little afraid that I had, when he talked to me, I had the offer, firm offer of a job, a good job, at Whiting, in the Whiting Research Department of Standard Oil Company of Indiana, and also had an offer of one in Standard Oil Company of New Jersey down in Baton Rouge.
And this was
1930.
The Depression, right?
Oh, this boy. They thought the Depression was over. We were being told that, 1930. Mm. Ho, ho, ho. Just like this one. This one's just getting up to speed. And that one was just getting up to speed in 1930. And I learned an awful lot in the field of practice by rubbing elbows with some very, very smart men. My boss, Walter Whitman.
Before we go to Standard, I would like to talk a little bit more, though, about Michigan.
Fine.
And your experiences with, I've heard stories about Brown.
G.G. Brown?
Right, I've heard stories about him.
Great God.
And Badger as well, I've heard.
W.L. Badger, yeah, he was a bear.
That's what I've heard. Donald Othmer has told me stories about him.
Well,
wondering if you have any.
I have a lot. I worked for Badger.
Oh.
Actually, he was the most severe taskmaster I ever had, but I learned. He was nasty. But he was a... But I also found out that he and his wife couldn't even get along, and I understand nobody can get along with him. And so, but I set my sights that I was going to get along with him because I was going to learn from him, and I did.
What was the curriculum like? What kind of courses did you take?
Oh, the curriculum is pretty much like it is today. It was a very modern chemical engineering curriculum. MIT added it, and really the father of that curriculum was W.K. Lewis at MIT. And Lewis was not, he was a much better teacher than Badger, although Badger taught the same things that Lewis taught, but I think Lewis taught some in a more acceptable way to me, but I accepted Badger as he was, not trying to make him as he ought to be. But Brown was an entirely different teacher. Brown handled the theory of chemical engineering much better than Badger. Badger had been out in the field in practice and learned a lot of the problems that they had in the field. And he did teach that too. But Brown was extremely good and applied mathematics way. Brown was super. And then there was a young man there that got his degree under Badger, and he went to MIT and got a doctorate under Lewis. And his name was Warren McCabe. And I got my master's degree under him. Now, he was an extremely capable individual in applied math.
Yes, in fact, you had a paper. I was wondering if it was your master's research, because your first publication was with McCabe.
Yes.
In industrial engineering chemistry.
That's correct.
Heat transfer to liquids and viscous flow.
That's correct. That was the first. And I at one time thought I was going to live and die in the field of heat transfer. Well, I found out there were much more interesting fields to me, and I pursued those.
That was your master's work, a practical laboratory type of work?
Yes, I had to carry out an experimental program to demonstrate that viscous flow, which is straight line flow, and could be reduced to mathematics. And I did that in that paper. Now, of course, they've gone on and in various applications.
As I recall, there was a specific equation which had been developed by, I'm not sure of the pronunciation, but Neusselt?
Neusselt, yeah, German.
Which you built on then?
Yes, I did. I was the first one to put together what they now call the condensation number. I had a stroke about 4 years ago, and my short-term memory is not as good as it used to be. My long-term memory is pretty good.
Oh, doing fine. Who were some of your fellow students at Michigan at that time?
Well, most of them have passed on. I'm outliving all of them. But George Holbrook, who was very close, and he worked at DuPont, and he and Crawford Greenwald were the fathers of the plant out in Oregon where plutonium was made.
Oh yes,
that was the first time plutonium was made. In Tennessee, they made U-235 there, and that was really the first atom bomb. The first and also the second. The first one was at Alamogordo, New Mexico. I have something here. I usually have it on my desk. Someplace here. It was Alamogordo, New Mexico, is where that first bomb was detonated. But there's an awful lot of chemical engineering involved in purification of plutonium, and also production of U-235. And I headed up an organization in Catalytic Construction Company, which was a part of Hoodry. I had headed up this group that built the first plant in Ohio, where U-235 was separated. The Mallinckrodt Chemical Company carried out the chemistry of it, and I remember one weekend going out to St. Louis with a group, with about four or five of us, and we got the information that this group designed the plant at Fernald, Ohio. That plant was built by Catalytic. And
let me come back to your first position. You left, you got your master's degree and your bachelor's degree together in 1930.
Yes.
And then you went to Standard of Indiana.
Yeah.
How did you make that contact? How did you get that job?
Well, they came looking for chemical engineers.
Okay, so they came to the campus.
And it was always very good to have high marks, because they always wanted the smartest in the class if they could get them. And they were paying top prices. And so they talked to me about if I had any interest in the oil industry, and I told them I was from Oklahoma and I was raised in the industry. I was very interested in it, and I wanted, that was where I would like to go. So I remember Fred Sullivan, Dr. Sullivan, he'd gotten his doctorate, PhD at Michigan in chemistry years before. And so I went out to Whiting and on that job because he hired me. And they were paying $200 a month. Mm. And I said, well, I want $225. And he said, all right, in your case, I'll give you $225. And all right, and it's a deal. So the Center of New Jersey people came in and talked to me. And they said, well, you want to make a career of this. And I said, well, that's what I'd like to do. And so they offered me $200 a month. And I said, well, I've already had an offer of $225. And he said, well, we'll make it $225, but that's all. And okay. And I had a hard time then deciding whether to go to Baton Rouge or Chicago or Whiting, Indiana. But I got one letter from my mother, and she was from the South, and she referred to Baton Rouge as the Skeeter Company, the Skeeter Country. I said, well, boy, I don't want to go down there and fight those mosquitoes. I've had a little of that, and I don't want that. I'd rather go to Chicago. And that was really the basis of my decision to take the Center of Indiana job rather than the Center of New Jersey. I think actually I would have done professionally much better if I had gone with New Jersey, because I could have gotten into much broader fields. But anyway, I shouldn't complain about what I got at Indiana, because I got an awful lot of good training there.
I've been at the Whiting Refinery many years ago, but back in the 50s, and I had a roommate, college roommate, who lived almost across the street from the refinery.
Oh, really?
So I know
Indianapolis Boulevard?
Yes, I know the territory very well. Used to go by it when I would go into Chicago. I was going to school in northern Indiana. at Valparaiso.
Oh, Valparaiso, yeah. Well, that's where they cooped, not Al Capone, but John Dillinger.
Somewhere in that area,
there.
And so we used to go into Chicago a lot, and in those days, the only way was to go right past that refinery.
Yeah,
so
probably rode the South Shore.
Well, we used to come in on the Pennsylvania Railroad, too.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you worked with Walter Whitman then.
He left soon after I transferred to Texas City. He left and went to MIT and head up the chemical engineering department.
Mm-hmm. What kind of person was he to work for?
Wonderful. I learned some bad habits from him, but that was my own fault. But he was really a sharp chemical engineer.
Can I ask what kind of bad habits you learned from?
Drinking.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't mean to.
My wife and son persuaded me to go into a psychiatric institute here in Washington for alcoholism. And thank God that I did that.
But that was pretty common in those days, from what I've seen in talking to people in the chemical industry, and especially. Well, I've talked to people that were in sales at Dow Chemical, for example, and that was in the sales end. That was very common. That was a real problem.
That's right.
Well, Whitman died young, didn't he?
Who?
Whitman didn't.
He died prematurely. Yes.
Well, other than that, professionally, what were your first assignments? What were you doing at Standard?
Well, my first job there was. A job. What they made you do every week, I had to write a report. No, it was every 2 weeks. A report pointing out the profitability of the work that I had done. In other words, how much more profit they could get out of what I had done. And I worked out a system there where. Of cleaning heat exchangers. They never did that regularly. They always did, they ran a heat exchanger until the wheels fell off of it. And then they did something. But I had recognized that I thought that, well, when these plants are shut down by regular turnarounds, why don't they clean these heat exchangers every time, and then they won't have to run it until it gets so it won't transfer any heat. Let's clean that too. And actually that turned out to be an extremely profitable end of the business. One of my college professors at Ann Arbor had told me that any chemical engineer that can't earn his salt in the hardest of times, saving fuel is no damn good. And I think that's right. I got into that field, and I got a reputation for being, well, it was pretty easy. And fuel oil in those days is only $1 a barrel, but boy, $1 a barrel, I made. Making Standard Vidiana a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Compared with the $225 they were paying me every month.
While you were there, you also wrote two papers that were published in Industrial Engineering Chemistry.
Yes.
Again, heat transfer was one, but the other was. Evidently, you did something on vertical tubes, which weren't yet in common practice.
I worked one of the jobs I had for Badger was to help Carl Monrad in his getting his PhD. And Carl got his degree in heat transmission on vertical tube condensers. And the vertical tube condensers, the theory that the Nissels had was that he attacked it from a just a straight mathematical, and he the way his mathematics were is that as the oil comes down the tube, why the film of condensate gets thicker as it goes down. Well, of course it should. You're condensing more, and eventually the total amount of condensate that the tube, the heat transfer, transferred through that tube, caused to be condensed, comes down, and the thickest film is there. That's not true. Actually, what happens is you run it in turbulent flow. You don't have straight line flow. And when the Reynolds number gets up to a certain size, well, the turbulence starts. Well, I figured out how much that was. And that was one of the first time the so-called Nusselt, the first, the condensate number is what I'm trying to think of, is used.